Hey everybody, welcome back to another week of Smart Mouth. This is your host, Catherine Spires, and this week our guest is, there's so many ways to describe you. I want to say actor, a prolific tweeter. I'm talking about Mara Wilson. Hi, Mara.
Hi, thank you so much.
I understand that you are a newsletter maven now.
Oh yeah, I just started a newsletter with Substack, and basically what that means is that I will write things usually weekly or bi-weekly, and that can be sent directly to your inbox. And there is content there that is free, but there's also premium content that you can sign up for that, that will be delivered to you as well. You can also read it on the site, mara.substack.com. It's called, I'm calling it because I have a thing about, I love BBC shows, and I love coming up with fake titles for them because I always have ridiculous names that have nothing to do with the show. Uh-huh. So it's called one of my fake BBC show titles, which is Shan't We Tell the Vicar?
That is so perfect. Wait, now that you've said that, were you a fan of The Vicar of Dibley?
I have not seen it. I have heard of it, but I've heard of it.
You got to add that to your rotation.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I mean, it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
But it's definitely that like wholesome kind of humor.
Yeah.
Like mid-90s, early 90s, probably. Yeah. Maybe even 80s. God, but that was a show that I feel like I grew up on. And I feel like if I watched it now, I'd barf and also die of boredom.
I feel like we got a lot of, we got exposure to a lot of BBC shows when we were young because I think a lot of Americans sort of think that that's culture.
Yes. Oh my God. We absolutely do.
So,
but
yeah.
Have you seen Are You Being Served?
I have not. No, oh but God. I know that one. Yeah.
It's all pussy jokes.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's all it is.
No, that's like, I love a lot of British comedies too. And all British comedies have titles that have nothing to do with it.
Yes.
Nothing to do with anything.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
Yeah.
So people, you go to the website and then you sign up, and if you want premium content, then you give them your credit.
Yeah, you can become a paid subscriber, kind of like Patreon. It's $5 a month or $50 a year. And so, yeah, and then you can get a lot more stuff, including, I think, one of these days I'm actually going to write a script for one of the fake BBC shows.
Oh my God, I love it. So this is a career move in terms of like being a writer and being like actively, continually being writing all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a book and I'm working on a couple of different writing projects right now, and that's definitely something that I always wanted to be a writer, and I definitely want to write more. I was a little burned out on personal essay after I wrote my book. I needed to take some time off from it.
Plus, what more can you give?
Yeah, exactly. And that's when I was writing. I mean, I was writing stuff for Reductress and other places when I was doing that. But I definitely want to do more writing, dramatic writing, that was something that I wanted to do. And I really wanted, I've also been writing regularly for Elle.
Fun.
Yeah. And that's been fun. But I knew that I wanted a consistent outlet. And, you know, I used to have a blog, but I didn't like it that much because all the upkeep was on me, and also all the promotion was on me.
Yeah,
and also I would spend hours and hours on a blog piece, and there was no way to get paid for it at all,
right?
Which was kind of difficult because you want to, there's only so much you can do. Those could be working hours.
Yeah.
There could be hours that you could be doing something else,
absolutely,
working in an actual job. So this, I think, this is a way that I can benefit. And also, I don't have to resort to advertising. I can have people who want to support me actually directly support me,
right,
which I like. They want to support me and I can give them stuff in return. And so I really like that format. There's also a lot of really interesting and wonderful people on there, like Daniel Mallory Ortberg, who is just, you know, the fun. We're all nodding. Yeah,
I know. We should have said something out loud, but like, we're all like, yes.
Yeah.
He's like the funniest. His Joan Didion, Anna Wintour.
I know.
Oh my God. I can't.
He is so funny. He, one of his like best friends from growing up was like a friend of mine in college.
Oh.
So we kind of have that connection, but yeah, he's super smart and super funny. And I think somewhere on my phone, I have a recording of him singing one of the songs from the Magic Mike soundtrack onto my voicemail, which is just, you know, that's him. That's his sense of humor. We always have really interesting conversations.
I'm intensely jealous.
Yeah. No, no, I'm still like, I still like don't know why he wants to hang out with me, but yeah, but yeah.
That's very cool. Do you know Nicole Cliff too?
Not personally, but okay. I've talked to Nicole Cliff. Okay. Yeah. And she's really cool.
She, I mean, when this airs, I don't know what the status will be, but she disabled her Twitter and it's actually... Oh. I'm so disappointed, but it's probably a really good thing because here's mm-hmm. the creepiest thing I do. I make a point during my day of going in and checking in on her Twitter.
To see
like what other funny stuff she has come
I definitely
up with.
Check her Twitter all the time too. Yeah. It's so, but I think she has a Substack now too, actually.
Oh yeah. So, about yeah. skincare and whatnot.
Yeah. About skincare. Yes. And so, and I don't even know that much stuff about skincare, but I love her writing so much that yeah. I think I'm going to end up subscribing to that.
Yeah.
Grief Bacon is another really great one that's on there.
Grief Bacon?
Grief Bacon. Yeah,
that's that German word, right? The translation of the German word.
I've is heard that what that this. Is?
Yeah, it's yeah. like a term that they have in German. It's Fitzgerald. One of those, like
one of those. Yeah.
Oh, Drew says that it's Kammerspeck, which is like that's when you're sad, so you eat in bed all day. Specifically bacon.
Is that what that means? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that explains a lot. That explains, but it's, yeah, hers is really beautiful. She's a really beautiful writer.
Nice.
So, yeah.
This is, okay, I'm interested to know more about you, but also for me, because like mm-hmm. as a very underemployed journalist, I'm like, so what'd you up to that, huh?
Well, I mean, we're trying to get more people involved, and I like it. I like the community that's there too.
I had no idea that it was like a community, that there was a community
it's,
feeling.
Yeah,
involved.
It really is, and like I think you can only comment if you are a subscriber. Oh, so it's
smart.
Not yeah
smart.
Which is really good, which means that yeah and it's nice. It means that you get to have kind of a relationship with these people that doesn't feel it doesn't feel exploitative and it doesn't feel uncomfortable. It feels like they honestly like you for who you are and appreciate That's, your work and they're supporting you and you are able to work with them too. It's a good feeling.
Very nice. That yeah. sounds cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to get back to this BBC thing. So I have heard that you are a huge fan of the Great British Bake Off.
Yes, I am.
Which didn't start on BBC, correct?
I don't think it did.
I think they just moved and it was that
right.
thing where
there was
Paul
a big
Hollywood
there was a
went, Mary Berry didn't.
Yeah, there's
like that.
A there's like a big there was a scandal there. There's BBC and then there's also I think what is it Channel 4?
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which
and
is
ITV,
where
I think
and ITV,
one?
Yeah, yeah. There's the BBC channels and yeah, it wasn't on those and now it's and it's, you know, it's a little different now because I mean, I love Mel and Sue so much mm-hmm. and they're not there
oh,
and
right,
Mary
right.
Berry isn't there either, which means that, I mean, and the hosts are, you know, they're like, everything's good, but in a way you get so used to it. It's almost like when I bake with a sugar substitute. I'm like, but like a good recipe with a sugar substitute where I'm like, I use xylitol or something and I'm like, oh, this almost tastes the same.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I didn't come to that show until very late. So I yeah. binged like, I think 4 seasons of it on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I had no frame of reference for how each episode or each season was received live when it came
right.
out. Or the contestants and the winners. I had no concept of whether people liked them or not.
Yeah.
And there were a couple times where afterwards I would Google it and I'm watching something, you know, 5 years later and I was gobsmacked every time to see how people were treating the
yeah.
contestants versus how I perceived
yeah,
them.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. There was a poor, oh God, Ruby Tando got so much shit and I loved her.
Yes.
She's an amazing writer
she
and person,
is.
But she was
yeah.
framed as this like young, insecure girl. And people were like, they're only keeping her on there because she's this hot young girl. And,
interesting.
And, you know, Paul probably thinks she's cute. And she was very frustrated with that. And she actually wrote something on, I think on Twitter. She was like, she was like, for all of you who think that, you know, I was only on there because I was flirting with Paul, I'm gay, bitches. And that was how she came out.
That's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. She's super smart. I really liked her because I definitely related to her being the kind of overachiever, you know, like struggling.
Okay.
You know, I really liked her a lot, but I know that there were like a bunch of people. Yeah. There was a lot of controversy and then there's Bingate and there's
what's that?
Bingate is when someone moved a baked Alaska that was supposed to be in the freezer
oh, no.
To make room. And
I think I did see
Yes,
this.
And there wasn't enough. And so he, instead of doing it, he chucked it in the bin. And they were like, where is your baked Alaska? And he's like, it's right here in the bin.
Oh,
and
God.
They were like, we would rather you'd shown us anything, rather than just throwing it in the bin. And so
he just had a tantrum?
He basically freaked out. And he was like, what am I going to do? I'm just going to throw it in the bin. And so he threw it away.
That is... The beauty of Great British Bake Off is that is like the most dramatic thing you can possibly think of. That is so much.
It really is.
It's such a wonderful show. You know, we can't, it can't be called Great British Bake Off in America.
Right. Because I think Pillsbury or somebody owns the right.
Yep.
Owns the right. So it's a Great British Baking Show, which doesn't sound.
It's not nearly as exciting. But
no,
yeah,
Bake
Off is a trademark term in America.
Yeah.
Which, come on, guys.
I also love just like the random pastoral shots they do in it. And
they're like, look, it's England.
Yeah, exactly. It's also. So just they'll be the music sounds like the music from like The Sims or like a 90s computer game, you know, just the little like just this little, it's so comforting. I love that show. That show, my friend recommended it to me when I was going through a breakup with someone who was not very nice to me. Mm-hmm. And I watched it then and it got me through it and got me like feeling strong. And so that is kind of, in some ways, that is like my grief bacon. That is what I watch when I'm really, you know, when I'm feeling sad. I've watched it so many times and I'm not really into reality TV and I'm not really into cooking shows, but Great British Bake Off just like touches something deep within my heart.
It is very soothing.
I do know that the Brits find it, they have a different relationship with it. Like I had a Star Baker pin that I got on Etsy.
Yeah.
And I was walking along with a British friend of mine and she looked at it, who was in town, and she looked at it and she did a double take and she goes, does that say Star Baker? And I said, yes. And she goes, that has to be earned.
Oh, oh my God. Wow.
The thing is, I am a good baker, but I'm not a star baker.
Well, you don't know.
I mean, I could work at it.
Yeah.
I could work at it.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. It's funny. The season was... Ruby Tandow, who's very cool and I think doing a lot of interesting things with the way that she writes about food now.
Yeah,
and she's
she is.
An anti-snob.
Yeah.
And she's interesting. She gets in trouble a lot, but I actually think she's just working through shit and it's public.
Yeah, she does. She does, but I feel like, yeah, I mean, I like her for that.
Yeah,
you know?
I do too. And actually, when I watched that, I remember thinking that she cried a lot on the show, but then realizing that she was only like 20 when they taped it, I was like, oh my God, well, of course.
Yeah.
She was tired.
Well, I mean, everybody always talks about Martha, but Martha got cocky, I thought. I don't know, but that was just me. Martha would be like, well, I'm the only person here who's made a tiramisu and I'm by far the youngest. And I was like, shut up, Martha.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I related much more to Ruby because if I were in that situation, I would also be crying all the time.
Yeah, yes. I know. It would be too much. There was another woman on that same season, another top three contestant, Kimberly.
Kimberly, yeah.
I liked her so much.
I loved Kimberly. I thought she should have won. If I loved Ruby, but I thought,
I kind of thought Kimberly would win too.
I thought Kimberly would win too. Frances was, I liked Frances's style, but I thought Kimberly was like...
She seemed really solid.
Like, yeah.
She really knew what she was doing. I think she has a podcast now called Food and Psych.
Oh, right.
She was like a psychology major.
I was like, she's like the perfect... I was like, wow, you're like, you just like have everything. You're a psychologist. You're an amazing baker.
Yeah.
You're really pretty.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah. I was just like, yeah.
I'm going to slash her.
I have a lot of like crushes from the Great British Bake Off where I'll just be like,
yeah. No, I mean, so watching it, I was like, oh, I like how she seems really confident.
Yeah.
Okay. That's another instance where Googling her,
God.
People thought she was arrogant. And I actually thought that that was such a cultural difference. Like if she had been on an American show, she would have been a fan favorite a million times over. But there's something... different going on with the culture that the fact that she was confident in her abilities.
Yeah.
British people just don't like that. All right. Let's talk about savory stuff.
Okay.
Matzo ball soup.
Yeah.
One of your favorites.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That is a food that is strongly connected with memory for me. So
really?
Yeah, I think, it's kind of funny to me now, like, because I grew up in LA. I mean, I grew up in Burbank, which is LA, but also isn't LA. It's technically part of Los Angeles, but it's also kind of its own thing.
Right. Yeah.
And where I grew up in Burbank was a lot more conservative and it was a lot more like Catholic and Protestant when I was growing up there. It was a lot of, It was a lot of Latino. There was a big Latino population, mm-hmm. and a big Armenian population, and there were not very many Jews. Mm-hmm. There were white people, but there weren't very many Jews. so I felt I think sometimes a little bit alone in that, you know, being the only Jewish kid in the class, uh-huh. which is funny because if I had lived in other neighborhoods in LA or other parts of LA, everybody, you know, and people always say, like, people think that this Jewish experience is this very, like, it, first of all, it has to be Ashkenazi and it has to be, like, well off, you know, uh-huh. and that is, like, the community that everybody thinks of when they think of the Jewish community. Like, they think of something like Transparent, you know, yeah. where they're a well off Jewish family in right. Pacific Palisades. And that's not, you know, going to, like, these like ritzy bar mitzvahs every weekend. And that's not who we were. We were lower middle class. My mother was Jewish. My father was Catholic, mm-hmm. but we were raised Jewish.
Okay.
And I do think that a lot of people, I don't have as much of a connection to food as some people do. And I think that's because my mom didn't seem to really like to cook very much. Mm-hmm. She also had five children, so it was hard to cook right. very much. Yeah. And my dad is an engineer. Uh-huh. Like my dad does not take a lot of joy in cooking. It's mostly just kind of like, you know, it's to serve a goal. My dad loves like a good cup of tea, but my dad is like the most British American man ever, just in terms of personality and the uh-huh. things he likes. And yeah. And, but he just kind of gave us whatever, like we would get the cans of chicken noodle soup and he would add like chicken bouillon to them and like cut up spaghetti. And we would have like chili mac, uh-huh. you know, where you get like you put the chili on top of the spaghetti.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that was, you know, after my mom died, that was like the single dad food that we
that
had.
Seems very single dad food.
It was
yes.
very, you know, he like, if Soylent had existed, he would have given us right. Soylent, I'm right. sure. He didn't. And, you know, and every now and then he would do things. He would do like the mac and cheese with the breadcrumbs baked in it. And he would bake bread for us. He was a good baker, and so was my mom.
I was just gonna say, like, engineer baker, it actually
yeah.
makes a lot of
oh,
sense.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. My dad makes really good bread. It's definitely, and that was something my mom did do. And that's one thing. I'm not a good cook, but I'm a good baker, mm-hmm. and I definitely got the like left-brained thing. My sister is a visual artist, and she's an amazing cook, but baking makes her anxious.
right,
she
right.
can't follow the directions yeah. as well. Yeah. So like, I remember she made these like really amazing little mini pie tartlet kind of things, like little tiny homemade fruit pies, mm-hmm. and I was like, these are so good. I was like, what's the recipe? And she's like, well, you take about equal amounts of this and equal amounts of this, and then you just mix it for a time, and then you do this and you knead it until it looks like this. And it was all just like, you know, you must do it until it is the color of a sunrise. And I was just like, what the hell? Just tell me, one cup this, one cup that.
That's so funny.
And yeah, it was very much, I have the instructions up on my fridge, and they're very poetic.
Aww.
But we did have, I mean, I think that the holidays, like the Jewish holidays for us were definitely, those were like a big, you know, there was a big tradition for us. And sometimes we would do, you know, matzo ball soups and latkes from the package. And sometimes mm-hmm. we would do the, you know, the homemade kind. But I also remember, you know, I also remember we went to, my brothers did, they were in like a Jewish little league team called the Maccabees, which is adorable.
Oh my God.
And they were in this field sort of like in West Hollywood. Uh-huh. And we would always go to Cantor's afterwards.
Cantor's being the very classic LA deli.
Yes.
Kosher style deli.
Course, yeah.
They have bacon in there in LA.
They do. but yeah. And Cantor's was like a classic for us.
Yeah.
And I loved matzo ball soup is what I don't know. I just feel like it is the, it's just associated with such memories for me and it feels just like eating matzo ball soup just feels like everything is going to be all right.
That's nice.
Yeah. It's something, and it's not too hard to make either. It's not easy, but it's not hard to make.
Okay.
Well, I mean, maybe from scratch it is, but
I was gonna say,
are we talking
store-bought?
Well, we made, I mean, my sister and I made it the other night, and we used like store-bought bone broth, but we also, you know, made the vegetables and sauteed mm-hmm. everything and basically made our own stock. And so, mm-hmm. and, uh, and, We tried a gluten-free matzo ball mix, mm-hmm. which actually it wasn't that bad, surprisingly.
Okay.
So I was recommended to do a diet that was no sugar, no dairy, no gluten for. Yeah, you're shaking your head. It is a major pain in the ass, but it's for
no fun zone.
It's a but it's for like health problems that I've had. So they say, you know, like you have to go off these things for a few weeks and see, you know, it was one of those
triggering your issues.
One of those. So I did that, and it actually, and you can actually get gluten-free matzo ball soup at Cantor's, and you can also get, I think, like vegan stock there too. So they have, and I love that because that's so LA.
Yes, it really is. I know that there's actually been drama, from about the issue of gluten-free and being gluten-free during Passover,
right?
And even people with celiac, there's some rabbis out there that are like, nope, then you're not doing it right.
Yeah,
but it's interesting because in the rules, the things that matzah is allowed to be made from, oat is one of them.
Yeah.
So if you get the super fancy oat where that like, super promise it hasn't been cross contaminated with anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you're safe in gluten free.
That's just expensive.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
So expensive. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you can do that. I mean, I try to keep Passover to some degree, but I don't. I mean, I'm not actually very religious. I don't believe in the spiritual tenets of it, but I think that I try to keep these up because I do like the tradition. I do like being in touch with it. But yeah, I mean, the joke is, you know, I'm Ashkenazi and I'm, which, you know, is the Eastern European and Russian Jews. And but everybody wants to be Sephardic on Passover because Sephardics have a different set of rules. Sephardics are the like Spanish Portuguese, sometimes Moroccan Jews. And yeah, and they have a whole other thing. Like they are allowed to eat, they're definitely allowed to eat rice. I think like lentils and legumes, they're allowed to have too. But whereas Ashkenazi people are like, I'm not so sure about this.
Right.
Yeah.
And Sephardic matzo can have eggs in it.
Yeah,
well.
Everybody wants to be Sephardic on which is and the thing is there is like a lot of cultural erasure with Sephardic culture. A lot of people think of Judaism and they think of Ashkenazi. They don't think
because we think of New York and delis.
Exactly. You would think of that. We think of matzo ball soup and you know, and that's what I am and I love it and I've, you know, I've dated other Ashkenazi people and I've had that strong connection to it. But yeah, but that is the cultural that's what the cultural view is, and you're not thinking of the Sephardic who, you know, are going to be having tagines and you know, they're much more like Spanish influenced and Iberian influenced, you know, kind of food.
It is, I don't want to say what food is better. There's more ingredients in it. Let's say that.
That's true. I mean, I'm okay with like bland food, you know. I'm used to it. I'm
German, Jewish, and Irish, so I feel like bland food is like my jam.
Same. I'm actually, I'm also pretty much half Irish. Like that's like very much, you know, the kind of thing I eat. I love saltine crackers.
Yeah, so
you
good.
Know? What, so good.
Better.
So good. I wish I could do, you know, spicy stuff, but I've teared up at spicy mustard.
I know, I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're so similar.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, I don't look Ashkenazi at all, but someone once told me that Ashkenazi women sweat a ton.
Oh, that explains a lot.
I know. I was like, oh my God, so that's the thing I get? That's okay. That's my heritage.
I know that there's like the Ruth Bader Ginsburg kind of gene where you are, if you're a short Jewish woman and you have outlasted all of the many, many genetic disorders thrown your way, you will live till you're like 200.
That just makes sense.
There's like a, like my grandmother, there was actually a gene that they said like short Jewish women might have a, you know, gene for longevity. So So if you, but the thing is like, you have to make sure that you don't die from any of the myriad diseases that we have.
You just gotta like battle your way through it.
Yeah. My great grandmother, I mean, she was like, you know, I think she had to be like 100 when she died. And she actually wasn't sure because they made her lie about her age when they came to Ellis Island.
Oh my God.
One of those situations, you know, but that's like a thing that you, the sort of tiny Jewish woman longevity gene is definitely a thing.
Nicely done then.
I mean, I would like to live a long time, you know, knock on wood and all that.
Right. Well, you've laid the groundwork.
Yeah.
So let's talk about like what exactly matzah is and why.
Yeah.
Why it is.
Yeah.
I guess. So like it comes from the Torah in Exodus. The story is that when the Pharaoh of Egypt, like he had said, okay, the Jews can go free because they had been the enslaved people. And then he was like, no, they can't. I changed my mind. So everyone had to run real quick out of there.
Yeah.
And the story goes that they had flour and they had water, but they didn't have time to like make fermented,
yeah,
leavened bread, and they didn't bring any other ingredients with them as well.
Right.
So during Passover,
mm-hmm,
you all the foods, the signature foods, the symbolic foods are in fact symbols of like different hardships and what, yeah, have you.
I always hated Passover.
Really?
I was a kid who really liked to eat carbs. So I don't know if I have a sweet tooth so much as I have a carb tooth.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So yeah, it was just kind of like, you can't eat any of the things that you love right now.
And yeah,
I was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
So,
and until you're older and you like get why it should,
exactly,
suck,
you're exactly, like, yeah.
Why would you do this?
Yeah, it was not my favorite. I liked, you know, I liked Hanukkah, I liked Purim, I, mm-hmm, liked
the fun,
you know,
ones.
I liked,
sure,
the fun ones. I even liked some of the, you know, the other ones, like you know, Simchas Torah, where you just dance around with a Torah, you,
okay,
know, things like that.
Yeah.
And Sukkot is fun. Sukkot is like it's kind of like a Thanksgiving, like fall harvest kind of thing where you eat outside, you build like a little shelter for yourself outside and eating it. And it's always really exciting for kids to be like, we eat outside. This is like, yeah, camping in a good,
yes,
way.
Yes.
So that was really fun. Passover, I never liked, but matzo ball soup was always such a thing. But you can have matzo ball soup all year round.
You can.
Yeah,
you
matzo meal can. Is, mm-hmm, is really what the thing is.
Yes. Do you know the 18-minute thing?
The 18-minute thing?
Yes.
So
apparently it's considered like, it's Jewish law that you can't, once you start making matzah, you're kneading the flour and the water together and you can't do it for longer than 18 minutes not that you're going to be kneading for 18 minutes. It has, yeah, to go into the oven inside of 18 minutes.
Interesting. I did not,
yeah,
know that.
And then I didn't know about this either. And then, so you also can't bake it longer than 18 minutes. Mm-hmm. And both of these things refer to, it shouldn't take longer than it would take to walk a Roman mile, which is 1,000 paces.
Mm.
So the idea is like, if you have it sitting there unbaked for longer than 18 minutes, then it will start to ferment, which of course, like fermentation happens at different heats and altitudes and stuff,
right,
like that. So it's more, it's, you know, it's a religious law.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And so the 1,000 paces was 18 minutes too. So nothing can like take longer than 18 minutes.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I had never,
I didn't
heard
know
of this.
That, but it makes sense with everything that I know about Jewish culture and tradition. And there's, everything is imbued with symbolism.
Right. Right.
Yeah. There's nothing that isn't symbolic of something greater, which is why I think you can be, you know, an atheist and still be Jewish. You can be, I mean, first of all, it's an ethnicity. It's not, mm-hmm, it's not, you know, it's an ethnicity and a history. It's not always a religion, but also there's just this idea of relating back to your history and connecting everything to everything and doing things a certain way because of your history.
Yeah.
My name actually comes from Exodus.
Really?
Yeah, it does. And it's not a very well-known story apparently, because I remember I really impressed a guy, like a guy in a Judaica shop in New York, uh-huh, in the 90s. I was like, my name's Mara. I was there with my grandmother, and he was like, oh, do you know the story of your name? And I said, yes. They were heading out of Egypt, and there was water, and there was an oasis there, and they called it the Mara Oasis. Mara means bitter, like bitter water, which is a great name. Thanks, Mom and Dad. Right? Like that was, bitterness is my destiny.
Well, at least you have an excuse.
Exactly. It's my birthright.
Yeah.
But I told him, I was like, yeah. And then the water was not good to drink. It was bitter water. But then God, and Tamara apparently means palm tree. So in context, it means oasis.
Okay.
You know, my name means an oasis, but you know, and they cast, but God cast a branch down into the water, and it made the water sweet to drink for them.
Oh.
So it's this kind of little minor miracle that God did. Yeah, where they were like, oh shit, we're dying of thirst. What are we going to do? And God was like, I'll take care of this.
So nice of him to do that.
Yeah, and it's he threw him a bone. Threw him a branch, more like. Yeah, and I remember like telling this to the man, and like the man at the Judaica store, you know, like nodded like knowingly, and he turned to my grandmother and he was like, you know, you got a great grandkid there.
Aww.
And I, when we left the store, my grandma was like, you know, not a lot of people know that story. So, you know, he was amazed that, you know, you at 9 years old knew that.
That's very cool.
And I was like, well, of course I know it. It's about me. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about the symbolism, and I think, well, I say this as someone who is Catholic and Jewish, and you are too. And
yeah,
I feel like they have a lot of overlap, cultural overlap.
Yeah.
They do a lot of things similarly.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing is making things difficult for yourself.
There's, you know, it's funny. I realized once, like a couple years ago, I was in my apartment and we did not have any hot water. And for like a while, and I realized, I was like, you know, if I were Protestant, I would have gotten this done. But I'm Jewish and Catholic, so I just think...
So it's my fault.
I must have deserved this. I must have deserved this.
That's so true.
Yeah.
It's such a double dose to be both things. And there's two different ways in which you think you're guilty of everything all the time.
It's also like a cultural thing, because I've also known well-off Jews who like grew up around a lot of like WASPy people, mm-hmm. you know, the like the Broad City, they joke about, you know, Abby being a WASPy Jew.
Yes.
But I knew those types. I went to NYU with a lot of them. Uh-huh. I've dated a lot of them. Uh-huh. And there's definitely, they are the kinds of people who will be like, you know, they will call customer support when the slightest thing is wrong. But I feel like we like, maybe it's like a lower middle class Jew. Maybe it's a Catholic thing. Like, mm-hmm. But it's just sort of like, this thing I got is broken. I got the wrong food at this restaurant. I guess I'll eat it anyway. I guess I'll deal with it anyway. Right. That's very much, you know, sort of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my family for sure.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Definitely more my Catholic family.
Actually, yeah,
family.
Come to think of it. I mean, when I think of, I think of like the Jewish side of the family, and they are very outspoken when like something goes wrong. But yeah, the Catholic side of the family, I feel like the Catholic influence kind of mitigates that.
Yeah.
Because those of us who are Jewish and Catholic, you know, we're kind of in our family, we're very much like, well, I don't want to make a fuss.
Right. Oh, God. So self-punishing.
Yeah.
So the Jewish law about like what matzah can be made from, it's the grains that would ferment.
Yeah.
So it's like, let's make this difficult.
Yeah.
By saying, you better not let this ferment.
Yeah.
Then you've broken all the laws.
Yeah.
That couldn't just be made out of something that wouldn't ferment no matter what. I thought that was an interesting little note.
Yeah. I kind of like that in a way. It is the you know, the remember how we suffered kind of thing.
Exactly.
It is sort of, it is supposed to be hard and hardship. It's sacrifice.
For those who aren't familiar, it is also known as the bread of affliction. Which is the most wonderful and dramatic name for a food.
Yeah.
I love it.
And
so
after
much.
A week of eating it, it feels like it. Although I have like my nieces and nephews, like they I don't know, maybe the Jewish genes are just strong in them, but they love eating matzah. They will eat it for fun all year round.
Plain
or with stuff on it, but sometimes just plain. Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know.
That
I don't know what it
is. Struggle.
But I also think that it might be like, I remember it would be like August and I'd be like, I want a matzah pizza today.
Interesting.
You know, I think it's also sort of it's maybe it's because it's like a special thing all year round. But I mean, it's not like, you know, candy canes. It's not something fun. It's tastes
not
like wallpaper paste.
But a lot of people make essentially toffee, that multi-layered.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
The matzah and then toffee and then chocolate.
Oh yeah.
And
people,
it's so good because I mean, it's so salty by design, which is the best way to have a sweet thing is to have it be really salty.
I like making, I had a babysitter who taught me how to make matzah pizza, which is just, you know, tomato sauce and cheese, but but that is really good. And it's really, there are definitely things you can do with it that are good. You can make like, I think you can make like a matzah tiramisu kind of variation or something.
That makes sense.
There's matzah cakes you can make. And so there's, There's definitely things about it that can be good, but
and as you said, you enjoy a nice saltine as well.
Oh, I love saltines. Yeah. Saltines, I think are they're slightly different though. They're more of
they
a.
Are.
But I also, you know, I also had like, and this is like almost stereotypically Ashkenazi. I always had like a nervous stomach growing up. I was always sick, and I still do. And you know, I don't know if it was just I was on a lot of antibiotics as a kid or what, but. I would like saltines were a comfort to me.
Yeah.
And matzo ball soup was too. There actually used to be, I remember I used to go to a doctor when I lived in New York. I used to go to a doctor that was across the street from a place that made really good matzo ball soup and bagels. Mm-hmm. And I would go there and cross the street every time I was sick. So they only knew me, like every time I visited there, I was sick. And immediately afterwards, I would go across the street and get a bagel and with some cream cheese or chicken salad or something and matzo ball soup. And I was like, they only know me as that sneezing, sniffling lady. They only know me as that lady who was like, hey, could I get some matzo ball soup, please? Yeah, they only knew me as the sick lady, but it always made me feel better.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you pay attention to what kind of matzah in terms of like the types that are allowed, wheat, barley, spelt, rye, sometimes oats? Like when you're buying it or whatever, do people even think about that?
I don't think about it so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did, you know, I tried the gluten-free one the other day, which was just made of potato starch, and it was surprisingly good. It's for matzo ball soup. I don't know if it's technically matzah,
right,
but I know there are gluten-free matzahs. I know there are these, but I think it was just kind of growing up. We didn't have as many. It was just like, we just got whatever was there. We just got whatever was on sale.
Yeah.
The cheapest brand, you know,
which
Manischewitz
more
or Straits or something.
In like the '80s and '90s than it is now.
You think so?
There's even more options. Ever more options in everything.
Yeah, that's true.
But certainly, like, I'm thinking of Gelson's, which is the fancy grocery store near me.
Yeah.
They have so many varieties of this kind of stuff.
I definitely, that's where I got the gluten-free matzo balls.
Of course. It would not be.
It's very, you know, I remember I told my sister, I was like, I went to Gelson's the other day. And she's like, what's it like? I'm like, it's pretty Jewish. I've seen like a lot of like Jewish celebrities coming in and out of Gelson's.
That's so funny.
I like
so funny and specific.
It's true. Like I was sitting outside and I like saw this like guy walking towards me and I was just like, that guy looks like a friendly, handsome man. And he smiled at me and walked into Gelson's. And I was like, oh, that's Jason Segel. That's who that is.
Oh, yes.
It's very much a like, yeah.
Do you get recognized a lot?
Sometimes, but usually only when people talk to me for like an extended period of time, or like if I get recognized in retail, like anytime I go to like Sephora or someplace like that, I get recognized. If people have to talk to me and, you know, I don't know, see my name on my card or something, they will
see your name,
you know, but even before that. Yeah. Especially in New York, it's very much like, I think like it's like a demographic age group kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, you know, 17 to 24 year old girls always knew who I was. Huh. Women, excuse me, always knew who I was.
Okay.
And also, you know, sometimes preteens would know who I was too. Huh. Like I remember being really, I like it when I'm recognized, although sometimes it makes me very tired. So, or
I can't even fathom.
It just, sometimes when I'm really tired, I can't, like, I remember being on the train in New York City once and I looked over and I saw a group of like preteen and teenage girls that were like on a class trip or something. And I got up and I moved to another train because I knew one of them was going to recognize me. And I was really sick and tired at the time. And I was like, if they want to take a picture with me, I'm going to feel awful.
Yeah.
But there are other times, like I used to get recognized on the subway sometimes. I remember on the subway, there were these two girls whispering like, is that? And it was my stop was coming up next. So I got up and I walked to the door and I turned around and like winked at them and then got off.
Oh my God. You made
and
their
yeah.
Year.
And you could tell they were like, oh my God. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
So funny.
It's fun to be able to do that.
Yeah.
It's fun to be able to do that too. So, yeah. And it's nice to know you're making someone's day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That must be really nice. I can see why Sephora with people would recognize you because they know faces.
Yeah. I guess that's true. Yeah. It happens at Sephora a lot. It happens. Yeah. If I'm like buying jeans somewhere, it always happens there. I think it is like an age group kind of thing.
You know, we're not recording at my house today. We usually record at my house and my dog is named Matilda.
Really?
And I was like, I just And now I'm telling you now, it's not named after you, but I like.
Is it named after the character?
Kind of.
I love
the character.
No, that's, I love that. I mean, it's, she's a great character.
Matilda's also just like an awesome name.
It is. It is a great name. What kind of dog is she?
German Shepherd Pug.
Oh my God. How did that even happen?
Who knows? I wasn't there. But she actually looks like a dingo. And I didn't know what dingoes looked like until someone told me that. And I Googled it and I was like, oh my God, she does look exactly like a dingo. And dingoes are Australian and Matilda is an Australian name. And like, so it came together somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, yeah. Naming your pets is like this weird kind of thing.
I know. And I get so Baroque about it. Like when I think about all the options I went through when I got her, they all had like at least three syllables.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my cat's name is Theo and I have like... I just thought he looked like a Theo.
Yeah.
And my other cat is named Milo and he came with that name because he's a big orange cat.
Oh, okay.
So of course Milo Notice had to be named Milo.
Right.
But Theo, I called him that and I realized there were like five different reasons for me calling him that. And I traced it back and I was like, oh, I guess it was that. And also that. And also that. And also that. But when I met him, he just looked like a Theo. There were all these unconscious layers to it.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man.
So I mean, I don't blame you. Matilda is a great name.
It is a great name. I was looking at your Twitter and I saw the other day you were talking about the reasons why so many lesbians love
Matilda.
Maybe your answer, I like fell over laughing. It was so funny.
it's very true. There's this really big, like, you know, queer population that loves it. And even before I was out, I was kind of, I think I always secretly hoped that I had like an LGBTQ following.
Oh.
I always hoped that I did. And now I do. And I'm very happy about that.
I mean, do you owe something to M. Beth Davids for that?
You know, everybody always asks me that, but she was like my sister.
No. I mean, like, because as you said, everyone had a crush on Miss Honey.
Everyone had a crush on Miss Honey. No, I definitely. Yeah, no, she did most of the work there. She did most of the work there. I suppose in some ways she's a wing woman for me. But people always ask me if I had a crush on her. And I'm like, no, she was like my sister. I loved her dearly, but she was a friend. I did, however, have a crush on an actress that I worked with a few months later.
Go on.
When Rhea Perlman had a sitcom at the time called Pearl with Malcolm McDowell, and John Ratzenberger was directing it when I was working on it. Like, a lot of Dash Mihok. He was wonderful. Great, great cast of people. Lovely. Yeah. I had a wonderful time. I cried when it was over because it felt like summer camp. It was just so fun. And Rhea got to introduce me to the live audience and said, like, this is Mara. Now I get to be nice to her. and there was this one actress on set who was so smart and funny and beautiful, and her character wasn't supposed to like my character.
Okay.
And she went out of her way. She's like, I know my character's not supposed to like you, but I really do like you and I want you to know that. And
you were still a kid, right?
Yes, I was a kid.
That seems like a really like something you should say to child.
Exactly.
Because like, I don't know.
I mean, I knew because I'd been in Matilda, you know, and
right,
I knew that Danny and Rhea loved me, but
tiny
it's still
brains in a child.
Exactly. She was, you know, but it meant enough that she went out of her way to say that to me. And she was a sweetheart, and she was, I remember thinking she was so beautiful, and she just radiated intelligence. She just, which was something that was very attractive to me. And I didn't know it at the time, but I remember like one day she had like food poisoning or something and couldn't come to the set. Mm-hmm. And I was devastated. I was so sad I wasn't going to see her. And it wasn't until years later that I realized what that was. Yeah. And and that actress was Lucy Liu.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, people are like, well, of course you had a crush on her.
Right.
I was like, no, I was like, and I remember like missing her after the you know,
no
the week
way
was over.
I mean, of course you had a crush on her.
Yeah. Like, and oh we saw God. Her. I remember seeing her at like when the show wrapped and we had a wrap party. I remember her seeing her, me and being like, hi, Mara. And like waving at me from the dance floor. And I was like, hi, Lucy. So good to see you again.
That is
yeah.
so cute.
I still get, yeah, I still like thinking of her in the past. I still get like all, you know.
No, I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah,
she's something special.
Yeah.
You're totally like staring
I'm just
face.
Like yeah, like even just thinking about it, like, well, I also just think it, like, it's like a wonder that it took me so long, because I was just, yeah, I was so, you know, I had this like, oh, I really admire these mm-hmm. women. I think mm-hmm. they're really cool. I think they're really, you know, I definitely owe something to Lucy Liu, I think.
That's awesome. Okay. Changing tack completely. So we've been talking about like matzah just yeah. in and of itself, but yeah. like matzo balls and matzo ball soup.
Yes.
Specifically.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny because you were talking about Ashkenazi Jews and how people mm-hmm. associate Jewishness with that tradition
yeah.
and ethnicity in particular. And so much of what I read actually talked about how when we as Americans think about Jewish food, mm-hmm. we're thinking about Eastern European.
It's true. It is Eastern European food. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why, like, I used to go to like Veselka and all these Eastern European restaurants mm-hmm. In New York and, you know, really love it there.
Yeah.
And that's, it's something that, you know, borscht is something to me too, you know, that's these things, they feel very familiar.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily need to go to a kosher deli, but mm-hmm. I can go to like a diner in
right.
New York and,
right.
and, you know, I could go there in like, you know, to a Ukrainian restaurant, to a Polish restaurant, still get the kinds of food that I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is very, you know, and there's a lot of talk in, you know, Jewish culture about being Ashkenormative and.
Oh, I haven't heard this. Walk me through it.
Ashkenormative is the sort of valuing the Ashkenazi experience over everything there is. And some of it is like, well, there's, I think, this also mistaken belief that they suffered the most recently because of the Holocaust,
oh.
which it isn't all true, but
sure,
there's
yeah,
this
no.
idea. So there's this idea of this. And, you know, so a lot of like major people a lot of famous people are Ashkenazi. A lot of, you know, uh-huh. major like Israeli figures are Ashkenazi. Uh-huh. There's like definitely a big thing there, and a lot of like Sephardic and Mizrahi and Ethiopian Jews are like, yo, what about us?
Huh.
You
oh,
know,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, which I've been wanting to try Ethiopian Jewish food for a while now because Ethiopian food is the best.
Yeah.
I love it so much. It's so savory and rich, and
yeah.
And it can be spicy, but it's not always spicy. It's just fantastic, and I would love to see like Ethiopian Jewish food.
Totally.
That would be. Yeah, I can only imagine. But there's a lot of sort of neglecting of
okay.
that. There's a lot of this sort of, you know, what
interesting.
It's true. It's a contentious thing, and it's kind of hard for me to get too deep into it.
Totally. I can imagine that's a sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. Well, so the thinking is that the matzo balls are an adaptation of knödel,
yeah,
which are German dumplings.
Yeah. I could see that.
Mm-hmm. And people think that it dates back to the Middle Ages, and it was sort of, the knödel are like breadcrumbs with mm-hmm. a bunch of dairy products
yeah.
mixed into them. And that for Jewish people, it was matzah meal.
Yeah.
And then traditionally you mix it up with some chicken fat.
Yeah.
And then, just water instead of milk.
Yeah,
basically, because you've got chicken and stuff in there, and people would just buy matzah at bakeries
mm-hmm.
and then save up the crumbs from the matzah all year, because at the time it was only eaten. Matzah ball soup was a Passover specialty,
right?
Yeah, which obviously, what with factories and industrialization,
yeah,
now you can get crumbs any time of year.
Well, I mean, I feel like that's kind of a thing, is like peasant foods, you know, becoming fancy. That's like a tradition of like the thing
yes.
that's just sort of like
yes.
the leftovers
yes.
made into something. There's a long tradition with that, with food.
That always happens.
Yeah.
When a machine was invented to make matzah.
Yeah.
People didn't like it.
Mm.
A lot of rabbis really put their foot down about it and said, we're not doing this.
Yeah. Rabbis, I mean, depending on the, you know, denomination, but are not always the most, you know, welcoming, aren't always the most welcome to change.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Why would they be?
Tradition.
Yeah.
Tradition.
So
yeah.
It was actually this machine for rolling out matzo dough was invented in 1838 by an inventor named Isaac Singer, but not the Isaac Singer who invented the sewing machine.
Yeah.
Who, that guy, by the way, was a bigamist, who was married to like 7 different women.
Really?
Often overlapping bunches at a time. And he had something like 24 children.
Wow.
But that's not this guy. I just thought that was so interesting. And then in 1888, a man named Dov Ber opened Manischewitz, the factory
mm-hmm.
in Cincinnati, and he changed his name to Manischewitz. And
he changed his name to Manischewitz?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why did he where did he take the name Manischewitz from?
I don't know. That I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. but he called it the Manischewitz factory, and it wasn't just the rolling of the dough. The whole production line got automated. And because of the era he was in, it was all about hygiene. Mm-hmm. And, in the 19 teens, their slogan was "No human hand touches these matzos."
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, I guess I can understand the idea of, I mean, people have been hesitant to change, have been resistant to change for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
We don't like it. And so, people used to complain. I remember like reading in like ancient Greek texts, people would complain about boats, that boats were hubristic to sail out onto the water, to make ships and that go out onto the water is challenging, arrogant and is challenging the God and mankind. You know, there was a golden age of man, but it has all been downhill since boats.
Right.
Or maybe ships, but you know, but boats. Yeah. But there's, I think that there's definitely this, I mean, I think I can see how, you know, rabbis would be like, well, no, you're not feeling it. You're not really experiencing it.
I mean, and it can seem actually disrespectful of tradition to invent these new ways of doing things, but it's the era, you know, it's the time when he was promoting his product by saying it hadn't been touched by human hands was also the time when popularly the idea of germs was becoming more understood.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So you'll see like a lot of marketing from that era, food marketing, saying stuff like that.
Oh, interesting.
How clean it is.
Yeah. Yes, makes sense.
Machines are better. However, they were called when he was just the powder to make matzo balls that he started packaging in the 1930s. And he called them on the packaging Alsatian feathery balls.
The fuck?
Yeah. Both of the looks on your faces are so cool. Okay. So this is something that makes me crazy. It's like a circular thinking. Is that the term I want to use?
Yeah.
So there's this woman, Joan Nathan, who's like the expert on Jewish food in America. She's written cookbooks. She knows all about it. And so I see that she has said that the term matzo ball was coined by vaudeville performers, like Borscht Belt performers. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now when I was trying to find out why it was, how, like the change, I guess, from Alsatian feathery balls to matzo balls.
Yeah.
Like, when did this happen? Wait,
what is Alsatian?
That's the like east of Germany.
Oh, right,
no,
right,
no,
right.
No, west of Germany, east of France area that technically falls in France now, but is like hotly contested and they really eat German food. It's a lot of sausages and sauerkraut.
Yeah.
So culturally, it's more German.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she said this about vaudeville performers, and now when I'm doing research, everyone says matzo ball was coined by vaudeville performers, but no one will provide me with the primary source
right,
for it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anything. The only thing I could find is that there is a song from 1906 called Under the Matzo Tree,
mm-hmm.
but no one in the song says what that means either.
Yeah.
So I'm really upset.
Well, were they known as, well, was it sort of like they were known as matzo balls and then he attempted this rebranding and they, because
oh,
if they were made from matzo meal and old matzo crumbs, you know, in the old days, mm-hmm. then it was, you know, it might've been related to matzo. The Alsatian feathery balls thing might have been, it might've been his attempt at rebranding or trying to, maybe he thought that there was, maybe it was trying to go to a bigger market or something. It's kind of like how, and it's like how in World War II, hot dogs became Liberty sandwiches,
right.
or Frankfurters became Liberty sandwiches.
Sauerkraut too is Liberty cabbage.
Yeah, Liberty cabbage, yeah. and dachshunds were Liberty dogs. They sort of the freedom fries kind of
right.
these kinds of things.
No,
yeah,
that totally makes sense because calling it Alsatian makes it seem European.
Yeah, exactly.
Waspy
there's
European,
and there's definitely still like resistance to. I remember people being like, "You like Manischewitz? That shit's gross." Mm. And I was like, "Well, it's you know, like the Manischewitz wine.
It is what it is.
It's good for Although I had an experience. I think like my nieces and nephews, you know, they love it, and they offered me. I think like one of them offered me a glass of Kedem grape juice after I hadn't been eating sugar for a while,
mm-hmm.
and I drank it and. It was like the sweetest thing I'd ever tasted. And I felt like I could see through time. And I was just like blinking and like reeling from the sugar. And then one of them goes, "Do you want another cup?" And I was like, "No, I think I might die."
That's That's really funny.
Yeah.
And very adult. Have you seen that gif of that baby who takes a sip of Coke for the first time? And
no.
Like, literally his head knocks back and his eyes roll back in his head.
Oh, God.
And then his face comes forward again and he's frowning. And then his frown releases and he takes another sip.
I think one of my brothers gave me like a one of those really sour like atomic warheads mm-hmm. or something as a kid, and apparently I put it in my he gave it to me and I like clapped my hand over my mouth and my eyes went wide and I just like sat there like that for you know like a minute and then I uncovered my mouth and went like I was panting uh-huh. and went, can I have another one?
Oh, man, we are not supposed to be eating that kind of sugar.
No, we are not. We are not.
That's bonkers.
Yeah.
Matzo balls, though, yes.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's
yes.
allowed.
Yeah.
Well, Mara, thank you so much
well, thank
for
you.
Having this discussion
thank
with
you.
Us. And remind people of where they can sign up for your newsletter.
You can sign up for Shan't We Tell the Vicar at mara.substack.com.
Awesome. And thanks. On Twitter, you are at?
I am at Mara Wilson.
Cool. Thank you again so much. This
no,
is great.
Thank you. This has been really fun.
Listen to your baby. Come out in the moonlight with me. Can't you see me kneeling? Hear me feeling. Ain't you got a feeling for me? Come.